Herzlich willkommen zu Saatkorn, deinem Podcast mit Inspiration für eine bessere Arbeitswelt. Hallihallo und herzlich willkommen zum Saatkorn-Podcast. Alle, die irgendwie Interesse am VC-Thema haben, wenn es um HR, HR-Tech, New Work geht, den kann ich heute, glaube ich, eine große Freude bereiten. Zumindest ich bereite mir gerade selbst eine ganz große Freude oder noch besser formuliert, mir bereitet jemand gerade eine große Freude und das ist niemand anders als Thomas Otter. Thomas ist Investor, das wird er aber gleich selber besser erklären können als ich hier. Aber er ist English Native Speaker und wir haben uns darauf verständigt, dass wir in Englisch weitersprechen. So werde ich also jetzt ins Englische switchen. And I'm super happy to have you here on the podcast, Thomas Otter. Welcome.
Yeah, vielen Dank. Yeah, I'll do this in English. I'm much cleverer in English than I am in German, although I do speak a form of German, but it's my own Heidelberg dialect. So we'll probably do today in English if that's okay with everybody. But it's super cool to meet you all.
I think it's absolutely fine because I will only ask questions. You have to do the talking. So
okay.
Fine.
Cool.
Right. Why don't we start with your personal way to where you are now? Acadian Ventures. How did this all happen? How did you become somebody who invests in other companies?
It's quite a long story, so get a coffee and I'll and then some food and maybe a tent, but it'll take a little while for me to explain. But I've been involved in HR technology in some form or other since I think 1993. I was at university at the time, and this guy came around the business school and said, "Does anyone here have a computer?" This was a class of HR people, and I was the only one who put up my hand. And he said to me, "Cool, there's an opportunity for a job in something called HR technology."
And I said, "Great." 93.
Yeah. And I said, "Great." And I said, "What does it pay?" And he said, "Twice the starting salary of an HR manager." So I said, "Cool." And so I've been involved in HR technology somehow ever since. I then moved to SAP in South Africa. And I came to Germany for what was 2 years, and it ended up being a lot longer than that. I had a career at SAP in the on-premise world. Then I left SAP. I went to Gartner, where I led the HR technology research at Gartner, doing Magic Quadrants and HR tech research there. And then SAP acquired SuccessFactors, and then Lars Delgaard, who was the founder of SuccessFactors, and Dmitry Krakowski, they called me up and said, "Would I like to come back and help build out Employee Central, which was the core HR system of SuccessFactors?" And so I decided to go back to SAP and really lead, and eventually leading the SuccessFactors product line from a product management point of view. Then about 5 years ago, I left SAP. I went back to university. I went to KIT and I finished my Dr. Arbeit. I've been doing it for a long, long time part-time, but I decided I needed to finish that. And then I set up my own advisory business, working with a lot of startups and scale-ups in HR tech. And I find myself getting more and more involved in the financial side of things in terms of working with investors, working with M&A, and really helping identify these companies and how they're working. And one of the things that I did when I left SAP is I made the decision to sell all my SAP shares. The timing was good. Not that I'm a great share dealer, but at my time, the timing was good. I sold my SAP shares, and part of that money I invested into Acadian. So I was in IT, in VC speak, I was essentially what is called the limited partner. And the firm had been set up by Jason Corsello in Connecticut in the US. Acadian is a mountain in Vermont, by the way, in case you're wondering what Acadian stands for. And Jason was the former head of strategy at Cornerstone On Demand, the learning management vendor. And I'd known him for many years and we got on reasonably well. And so I decided to invest in the fund as an investor. And that early stage VC fund has been super successful. And so I stayed closely in contact with Jason. And then towards the end of 2021, we got talking about the idea of me joining him full-time as a general partner, which is as an investor in the firm. So not just as a as somebody who gives money into the VC, but actually as an operating component of the VC firm. And so that's how I got involved into VC. So it's an unusual path. And a lot of people go into VC from investment banking or from some other path. And I've gone into it from the perspective of being an operator in HR technology, and then moving from there into the investment side of things. And so it's an unusual path to end up being an investor, but it is building on, you know, the best part of, you know, 30 years of HR technology experience.
For me, it makes totally sense. Although, of course, the usual way probably would be different. But usual ways are sometimes also a little bit boring. So your story is not only great in terms of where you are right now, but it's also really interesting. And it's also, I think, very good to have somebody on board in a company that really did this job for a long time on an operative level, on a management and strategic level as well. So what's your view on the development of HR tech, if you look backwards, but also if you look at the status quo, and we'll talk about the future later on in the talk.
Yeah. So there's a bit of a paradox with HR technology, and I'll explain that. On the one hand, it's easy to say that HR is behind other functions in organizations in terms of adoption of technologies, and you hear that argument a lot.
Yeah.
And in many ways, it's valid, but also it's not valid. And let me explain why it's not valid. So if we go back even older than you are, and we go back to 1951, that was the first use of technology in a business context, right? Of a computer in a business context. And the first business application ever was a payroll, right? In 1951, a British company called Lyons Tea Room developed the first payroll. They did it in 2 years, right? And so they designed the payroll, built the payroll. And at the same time, they built the computer, because the computer didn't exist, the hardware. They soldered and welded and stuck together the computer. They invented the programming language to write the payroll. And they wrote the payroll. And they did that in 2 years. And they ran a payroll for 20,000 people in 1953. And this was the first use of HR, the first use of technology. So HR was at the forefront of technology adoption. Similarly, as we look through, the first use of the internet for a business purpose, other than a business purpose we won't discuss, was e-recruiting, right? Monster, those companies were really the first commercial successes of using the internet for a business purpose. Employee self-service was the first use of the browser as a front end for a business transaction, right? Inside the organization. Similarly, if you look forward to the adoption of SaaS, it's a toss-up between CRM and HR as to what's driven the SaaS wave. So there's this paradox. On the one hand, you can complain that HR doesn't adopt technologies fast enough, or that the technologies aren't suitable for HR. But at the same time, it's also a place of tremendous technology innovation. And it's this tension that I find fascinating.
Oh, I can totally understand your point of view. My story, of course, is way shorter than your story. I started at the end of the 90s, 1999. And I felt at that time, that was really when the first company started to have their own career websites. And it was right also with the merge of the job boards, the timing. And I exactly had the feeling, wow, here's a business model. And obviously it seems to work with the job boards. And I felt HR is pretty ahead. But then again, if you look into how technology developed over time and how other entities and organizations adopted technology, for instance, marketing, probably they were way faster then. But perhaps it's also because HR has also different other levels. It's not only about technology, and Perhaps that's the reason why it's always seen as a little slow, since a lot of HR people come from a legal background. They try to avoid risks. They are not real entrepreneurs sometimes because they have to really take care of risks. And perhaps that stands a little bit in the way sometimes if you look at the function in general. I have the feeling that for the last, let's say, well, I would say 5 to 10 years, there's a slow shift starting to happen. And now, since 2 years, there's really lots of things happening, of course, also due to the pandemic situation. So what's your view on the status quo? Where do we stand right now?
Right. I think you're dead right. I think the whole process of COVID and our response to that has really accelerated digitalization. That's a terrible word, but the adoption of technology has been driven in part by and accelerated in part by COVID. It's terrible to think of COVID as having had a positive impact. But I think what it has is it's helped us kill some of the mythology around things like remote work. People are realizing that remote work can actually be effective, can actually be viable. People don't always have to be in the office. Meetings can happen remotely and be effective. The German government doesn't seem to agree, but signatures don't have to be in ink to function. So there's been many elements, I think, that have been driven by COVID. I think what we've also seen is we've seen a maturing of SaaS, software as a service, into essentially the dominant delivery method of software. So if you go back to my earlier in my career, if I go back to when I first started looking at success factors when I was at Gartner, is SaaS going to work? Is cloud going to work? Are the licensing, the business models and the technology idea going to actually work? Well, now we know that it works, right? Something like 90% of the DAX are using cloud HR software today in some form or other for pretty core significant processes. The adoption of SaaS was initially slow in Germany, but it is now the de facto delivery model for software. So a lot of the risk that you were talking about, I think, has been moved out of the equation now. IT is much more comfortable with SaaS. HR leaders themselves, I think, are comfortable with the concept. So I think we're seeing a readiness and an energy for adoption from HR that perhaps we didn't see in the past. At the same time, we're also seeing quite a lot of investor interest and startup interest in the space, which I think is super exciting because we get to see all these great new emerging companies and hopefully back the winners. I mean, there's some examples of Germany. I think companies that have been really successful. I'm very fond of Staffbase. I think that's a fascinating example of a company that's really developed a whole new category of software. There wasn't really a coherent approach to communications software. And Staffbase, I think, have really pioneered that, not only in Germany, but I think potentially globally as well. That's a fascinating story. And I think it's a great example of how technology can be used to really improve work. We all know the Personio story, but I think what they've built is pretty remarkable. So there's a lot of innovation going on at the moment. And funny enough, to me, it seems almost the innovation at the moment has been at the SME level, at the smaller level, than at the enterprise level. At the enterprise level, we've got well-established players like SAP SuccessFactors, Oracle, and of course Workday. So the high end is well established, but there's a lot of like short-term disruption in the SME, especially in Germany. For 30 years, it's been Datev or Bahalas, and now we're suddenly in a position where that control that was payroll dominated is now being disrupted by these newer players. So there's a lot of super exciting stuff going on at the moment.
I completely agree. Regarding the German market, of course, the SME plays, I guess, a very important role since the major backbone of the German economy are SMEs, obviously. Yeah. And that leads me to another question. In the past, we had these big suites. SAP is one of them, but you mentioned some other. Phantom, for instance, is also going this route. But there's also a lot of new startups, new HR tech companies. And sometimes I have the feeling they focus more on features than solutions, which on the one hand I can understand, because they might say, okay, within the recruitment process, here's a certain step, and here this is perfectly done by our feature. But then again, if you would have to work with these startups, you would have like 10 features like that. And of course, from an administrative point of view, how do you really work with them? It's getting really complicated. Whereas on the other side, if you want to buy one of those big suites, they are far too expensive for the SME market. So where do you see a sweet spot of technology really that's focusing on SME? What do they have to take into account?
Well, I think it goes in waves, right? And so there'll be waves of suite dominance, and then there'll be waves, or the wave of niche product, niche product dominance. And I don't think there's one particular answer. I think the way I'd advise companies to look at it is focus on where your business problem is, right? And so, if you are a rapidly fast-growing software startup, your biggest challenge is probably recruitment.
Yeah.
Right? So my advice to you is buy the best recruitment technology you can afford that will solve for that problem that will drive for recruitment, and be less worried about the other elements of HR tech at that particular point in time. But if you are a comfortable, well-established Mittelstand company, growing at 10% a year, and you hire, 20 people a year, then really what you get from a suite is probably going to be pretty good for you. Where you might want specialization, for instance, if you are a complicated manufacturing SME company, is in time and attendance. You might say, well, my suite doesn't really do what I need from a time and attendance point of view. So then focus on solving for that particular, for that particular problem you have in your business at a particular point in time. So I don't think there's one answer to the suite, the best of breed suite debate. I think some things are changing the nature of that debate. I think one of the things that's happening, which is great, is the cost of integration has come down dramatically because of better APIs, so better application programming interfaces between the applications, between your SuccessFactors and another application, that those interfaces and stuff are so much better than they were 10 or 15 years ago. And there's actually now an emerging category of middleware software that actually really helps you manage those integrations effectively. So I think the opportunities to combine niche applications and suites is far better than it used to be. I do think that, as the economy, when the economy tightens, suites tend to be stronger. There tends to be more emphasis on suite, coming from procurement, fewer applications, cost saving, and so on. But, the innovation tends to happen in the niches, and then that innovation over time is then absorbed by the suite players.
Thanks for these insights. I think a lot of people tend to ask themselves exactly this question. Should I go with a suite or should I go with smaller solutions? So it's great to always focus where your business problem really is. In terms of tightening economy situations, At the moment, we face a very interesting situation in my point of view, because looking at the news in the evening on TV, or if you look news on TV or watch news on TV, whatever, there's always a feeling everything breaks down. Then if I talk to the HR tech companies, but also if I talk to our customers, I see that recruitment is still a major topic. Retention is becoming a major topic. So the market is not really totally down. But of course, it's also not as great as, let's say, in 2020, 2021, or 2022. Sure. So from your perspective as an investor, from your Acadian point of view, how do you see the market right now? There's lots of money that was invested in the years I mentioned. This year, the investors are pretty reluctant at this point in time, most of them at least. Yeah. So what's your point of view? What's your perspective on the current economic situation?
Well, I think, so if we look at HR, if we look at the HR context in particular, we have this the demographic reality in many markets is that there is a skill shortage. There is a shortage of people, there are more jobs than there are people. I look at the Head Jobs Index every now and again. It's fascinating. If you've not seen that Head Jobs Index, it's really cool. You can see, like, for particular types of jobs, how many active job seekers are there for a particular type of vacancy, and it's amazing how tight the job market still is. It's maybe perhaps not as tight as it was a little while ago, but the job market is still tight. So on the one hand, you've got a tight job market. On the other hand, we've had a very different world in finance, where we've gone from a situation of, say, three or four years ago, where money was not a constraint, to where we find higher interest rates and a much more challenging fundraising environment, both for investors and also for the deployment of that investment capital. So the good thing for us is that there is still this massive business problem. There are 3.2 billion people in the world who go to work, and the systems that support those people are often inadequate. So there's still a massive demand for HR tech, and there are innovative people who understand and are excited about that problem. So for us as an investor, as an early stage investor, is what we are. We quite like this time because we find founders that want to work with us, that are prepared to spend time to understand our investment thesis and how we work. And so we don't see a shortage of investment opportunities at this point in time. So for us, it's actually, we're enjoying this post bubble period where we're actually returning to a previous normality rather than in some sort of massive, horrible depression. It's just that things were so unusually good for the last few years that we forget about, normality, about things like profit and things like return on investment and so on. But, for 30 years, those are things we looked at. And so, for a few years, we forgot about those things. And so I think it's not so doom and gloom. And at the same time, we're in a massive wave of interesting new technologies, driven in part by all the activities around AI.
It's interesting. I just took a look at your website, Acadian Ventures. Of course, I will link it in the show notes.
Cool. Thank you.
We'll also, if you are happy with that, link your LinkedIn profile if somebody wants to get in touch with you. Perhaps there might be some HR tech people who say now, oh, this guy is very interesting. But if I take a look, and it's very nice, your website, I can enter investment year, and I see the investments that Acadian Venture took. So in 22 and 21, it was always nine each year, nine investments. This year so far, two investments. But of course, we speak now in May, so probably you will end up with more than just two. In terms of Germany, it's interesting. I don't find at the moment, or I didn't look right, a German investment so far. Is that correct or am I wrong?
Yeah, so we haven't done a German investment in the last couple of years. We had a German investment, JobPal, which was acquired by Smart Recruiters. I've been looking. I've been looking hard for German investments. I just haven't quite found yet the right thing. We've actually done quite a few investments in France. And it's quite interesting, I think, to compare the French and the German HR tech scene.
From what I know, there's much more political support for the startup scene in France than in Germany.
I think that is true.
It's a major topic of Macron to really support the HR, not the HR in general, the startup scene in France. So do you have any recommendation for the German politicians?
I do. And look, I've got to be cautious of telling politicians how to do their job, because they have a very difficult job. But if we think back to Germany, was the best place in the world to do a startup in 1960.
That's long ago.
Yeah, long ago. But if you think about it, the systems that they put in place, that Germany put in place in the 60s, were the best in the world for a startup, right? In terms of the constructions of the labor law, in terms of the investment support, so the way that the Deutsche Banks and the Commerzbanks and so on, and the Sparkasse and the local banks supported business in the community was for the time supremely innovative. It was very tax efficient. There were lots of tax support. There was lots of support from governments as well. At that time, even the labor market, not that I think the whole Gastarbeiter thing was a horrible construct from a human rights point of view, but from an economic point of view, the government behaved in a way that met the needs of industry, right? And yet if I look today, right, most of the time, and I think it's perhaps changed a little bit with the current government construction, but if I look for past government construction, they largely ignored the software industry. The fact that there's only one successful, big listed software company, SAP, is a damning failure for Germany. There should be 10 SAPs on the DAX. And part of that goes, I think, to the government still largely thinking about industry in terms of physical industry. I think there is a focus. There's an over focus on trying to defend the automotive industry, to support, traditional Mittelstand structures. I'm very excited about some of the new efforts that are coming. I think there's been, we've seen both from the SPD and from the FDP and others from the Greens, a much more enlightened approach to the startup community, and looking to address some of the issues, the fundamental legal issues, things like dry income, the time it takes to form a company in Germany, those kind of things, I think, will be addressed over time. And I would suggest that my advice to the government is to start small and address those things, before you start saying, okay, here's a big bunch of money, let's dump it. Rather fix those bureaucratic administrative processes that are in the way. Make the changes to the taxation regulations that will enable startups to be attractive, not just for investors, but for employees, right? So stock options should be a fundamental component of employee pay and opportunity, right? And I think there's actually a kind of a very interesting equality angle to stock options, and by giving stock options, you enable employees to participate in the success of the business, right? So you should expect that with, you know, in a socially democratic society, that stock options are a fundamental common part of compensation practice, and they should be made, it should be made so. Stock options are somehow seen as this sort of dirty, evil way of, locust way of paying people. Yet I think it's a, we need to change that attitude towards stock options and make them, you know, broadly participatory across the workplace. And if we can do that, we will create more attraction for people to work in startups, and we will create more momentum around the startup community. You know, I think there's a lot of good stuff starting to happen in universities. I like what TUM and KIT and others are doing in terms of starting to work better with WHU. I think is an excellent program with, you know, encouraging startups. Code, new university in Berlin. I kind of like that. There are outposts of excellence, and we need now to accelerate and drive that. And drive that forward.
I completely agree. I know two, I think at the end of the day, privately driven initiatives. One would be the Founders Foundation in Bielefeld, which I really like. They try to build up an ecosystem of companies, science, the university, and startups. And in Heilbronn, we have the LearnTech Hub. Also very fascinating what's going on there. So I feel like we could talk now two more hours. Unfortunately, time is running up here.
Yeah.
So given that the Saatkorn claim is inspiration for a better working world, did you feel some inspiration lately, which you want to share? It might be a book that you read, or perhaps an experience that you made, or something like that.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about a company that we invested in, because hey, I would be stupid not to do that as an investor. And you know, we've invested in over 30 companies, so the other 29 are going to be upset that I didn't mention them. But I think I'm going to talk about. An investment we made in Kenya.
All right, great.
Right. So, you know, if you look at, if you think about the, you know, when you think about HR technology, you always think about the emerging, existing, you know, large economy places. But, you know, many people live in, you know, it sounds a dumb question, but the, you know, the population of Africa dwarfs the population of Europe. And our future is going to be, as a planet, is going to be driven by, not by the success of Europe, not by the success of the United States, but by the success of Africa and by Asia, the success in Asia and Latin America. We need to see those societies evolve and develop, those economies grow and flourish and fluster and strengthen. So we came across a company in Kenya called WorkPay, and what they're building is a very, very effective core HR and payroll system for sub-Saharan Africa, right? And the opportunity for HR technology to fundamentally improve people's working lives there is super, super inspirational. Because, you know, when you put a payroll in, you help reduce fraud. You know, you help increase workplace transparency. You make sure that taxes are collected effectively. So we believe that done right, an HR system and a payroll system in that context can have a meaningful impact on people's lives. Yeah. And we can, you know, through those kind of investments, we can actually make a dramatic change and a dramatic positive impact. So I'm actually going to Kenya in a couple of weeks' time, and I'm really excited to meet the whole team down there. But that's something that I found super, super inspirational and exciting lately.
That sounds really fascinating. I also am going to link WorkPay. Honestly, I envy you a little bit to go to Africa and to find out what's going on there, because I guess the development that we've made here in the German market from the 60s to nowadays, which we discussed in this podcast on a, of course, high level. This will go way, way faster in Africa. I'm sure about that. And this will be really fascinating to see.
I mean, the things that they do is like pay slips via WhatsApp, and you know, the opportunity to go from basically a very, very low starting point to leapfrogging current technology and opportunity is super fascinating.
Great. To me, it was really fascinating to talk to you, Thomas. Very inspiring talk, highlight of my small podcast career here. So thanks a lot for taking half an hour talking to Saatkorn. Perhaps we make a second edition in some months. For me, it was really a pleasure. I wish you all the best, also with Acadian and your investments, and hopefully you will have a German investment
We've been close on a couple. We've just not quite closed on anyone yet, but I hope so. And I'll see you at your event in June.
Yeah, looking forward to see you there.
Okay. All right. Cool. So, all right.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Tschüss.
Hat dir diese Saatkorn Podcast Episode gefallen? Dann komm doch am 6. und 7. Juni nach Berlin. Da gibt's das RC23 Festival unter dem Motto Open Your Mind to Recruit and Retain. Wir wollen da gemeinsam lernen, netzwerken und feiern. Mit über 130 SpeakerInnen auf 7 Stages, In- und Outdoor, mit 6 Panels, 5 Workshops, 4 Talks, 2 Book-Signing-Sessions, ganz spannenden Keynotes, Praxis-Cases, en masse, in der großen HR-Tech- und Startup-Area mit 40 Startups und HR-Tech-Lösungen, mit eigenen Focus-Stages für die Themen Recruiting, Retention und Ausbildung. Und vieles, vieles mehr. Eine geile Party gibt es am 6. Juni. Obendrauf, super Live-Act, DJ, Open-End, Food and Drinks included. Tickets gibt es ab sofort unter www.rc23.de. Ich freue mich, wenn wir uns dort sehen. Bis dann. Ciao.